Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening. My next guest is Will Winfield. He is a social emotional learning expert, an international speaker, and a five-time author. He equips students and educators to manage internal conflict. He's also an educational consultant, minister, and DISC consultant. William is the father of two wonderful sons, a beautiful daughter, and husband to Jennifer. He has over 5 years of experience in public speaking, mentoring, and coaching. He is one of the most sought-after motivational speakers for inspiring and activating students and educators in America. His own life experiences, such as being in foster care, homelessness, losing a football scholarship, being raised by a single mother, and being molested, prepared him well to have made him an expert in his field. His transparency, honesty, and heartfelt desire to inspire people to achieve greatness is what sets William apart. Welcome to the podcast, Will.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Well, I'll start here. So I became homeless after I lost my job in Franklin, Massachusetts, a recycling company for 3 years, walked on a job, you know, normal day to me. And I thought, you know, nothing of it, you know, got in there, scanned some refrigerators, did some demoing, you know, I'm throwing, you know, trash away. And my supervisor comes on the forklift. Says, William, Phil needs to see you. And I was like, okay, well, you know, I'm hoping that maybe Phil want me to go take a truck run and pick up some more refrigerators. So get into the office. He turns around and he says, hey, Will, how you doing? I said, I'm great. How are you doing, Phil? He said, I'm good, but I'm not good. Unfortunately, I have to, you know, let you go because the company's going through a financial issue. Now, me, I'm like, well, me out of everybody, you got people who are sitting down, ain't even doing no work. I'm over here busting my behind and all that. So, you know, long story short, left the job. And then I was able to finally reconnect with a good friend of mine, Gilbert, because after that, I was sleeping in my car. I had nowhere to go. So I was sleeping in my car with all my clothes and everything. And I contacted my friend. And that's why, you know, I'm big on making sure that students definitely understand the importance of really cultivating real friendships. Because the truth be told is that, you know, when you graduate, half the people who you call your friends, you no longer talk to anymore.
Yeah.
So I was just thankful to be able to have that relationship still with my friend Gilbert. And he let me stay with him so I can get on my feet. And then from there, I was able to get a job at a shelter. And it changed my life because I was the individual who would make fun of homeless people, have them chase me down the street for a dollar and, you know, call them a bum. And for me, to be honest, you know, it was a reality check and a reality shift for me to say, you know what, you got to humble yourself. You know, you're no better than anybody. Understand that people are human and everybody has their go through. So I ended up getting a job at the shelter and there was a guy there by the name of Anthony. And Anthony had a major issue with suicidal thoughts. And my coworker, I guess he wanted me to go speak with him because I was always on the floor speaking to all the homeless people, trying to figure out their life story and where they came from and the things that they've encountered, you know, because I'm a people person. I love people. So I finally went down and talked to Anthony. I said, Anthony, what's going on? You know, and he said to me, well, you know, people keep robbing me. People are not being my friends like they say they are. You know, I'm not getting my housing. I just feel like life is worth living. And I said, what do you mean by that? He said, I just don't feel like living no more. I said, well, you shouldn't say that. I said, you will get through this if you want to get through it. And I believe. So I said, of course, because of protocol, you got to have, you know, call the ambulance. The ambulance was coming. So I went downstairs with Anthony, sat with him, and I told him everything's going to be all right. He said, I hope so, William. I hope so. Yeah. I really do. And I just hugged him and I just helped him into the ambulance. And, you know, ambulance came, took him. Literally 3 days later, he came back. And when I got into work, clocked in, my friend Jerome was just like, Will, Anthony's back. I said, oh, Lord, I hope he's good this time. And he's like, no, he's happy. He's ecstatic. He wants to see you. I'm like, okay, cool. So I went down there and he hugged me so tight. I still feel like my bones crack because that's how tight he hugged me.
Wow.
And he said, William, because of you, you changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think anything of it, but I'm just like, all I really said was, I believe in you and everything will be all right.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when I realized that my words have power. And then from there, I ended up getting a job working at a drug rehab facility. And the same thing kind of happened, but I was, now you got to imagine this. I'm 25.
Mm-hmm.
I'm speaking in a group of 40 men, grown men, 25, trying to teach them about life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget the presentation that I said to them was, eagles do not stress the opinions of pigeons.
Mm-hmm.
And there was two guys in the back that I have no idea that was contemplating on leaving the program and overdosing because mm-hmm. life was that bad. After the presentation, a counselor came up to me and said, William, do you not know what you did today? I said, no, I don't. I just, I know I gave a presentation and just gave my heart and soul out to these guys. And she said, well, I'm glad you did, because these two said, because of you, they're not going to leave an OD. And to this day, they're still clean and sober.
Wow. So
that's just, my story. Like, I can never leave that out because that's how I got to where I'm at today. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these people you're telling me, that you worked with and things, they saw the potential in you before you actually saw it in yourself, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And how that the words that you used, maybe something as simple as that presentation that you didn't think really was that inspiring, but the way you did it, the words that you used were able to make a difference.
Right. Right.
So what led you then into speaking at high schools and colleges and into the work that you are doing now?
Yeah. So I was like, if I can inspire adults,
mm-hmm.
surely I can inspire students.
Mm-hmm.
Well, most individuals telling me, well, students are more difficult than educators. And I was like, well, I don't know. Let me try. Cause it's kind of like, when somebody says, that movie is not good.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go see the movie, like, this movie wasn't bad. What are they talking about? Right. So, I eventually had my first speaking engagement. I reached out to a couple of community members out there where I was living in Rhode Island at the time. And I said, hey, I just really want to share my story, and just inspire some students. So I'll never forget. It was Youth Build. Went there, did a presentation for 7 students, and just basically added as much value as I can, told them my story. They was inspired. They was encouraged. They was motivated. And, from there, I was just like, this is where my heart is,
mm-hmm.
because I never want students to make the mistakes that I made dealing with popularity, hanging around the wrong crowd, more focused on girls instead of focusing on your grades, yeah. not losing football scholarship. So my mindset was like, it's my job to make sure that you don't go through what I went through, if you want to, because we all have a choice in life, right? So, from there, it just took off, and I was, faithful to 7 students, and then I was able to have a presentation with another group called the Sweet Youth Organization in Rhode Island, spoke to their students. It was about 13, and, before you knew it, it just started spreading like wildfire. Hey, you need to get William here. You need to get William here. He's passionate. He loves the students. He loves the youth, and from there, it just started blowing up, and that's what I would say as far as getting into that avenue. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And most of it then you say is by word of mouth, right? Yeah. And so you didn't really have to put too much advertising or, people might have shared things on social media, but a lot of it was just, okay, they got a lot of inspiration. And so they suggested then that you talk to this other group and it led from there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. No advertising at all.
Uh-huh.
So.
So a lot of the time, you told me in the pre-chat that you you give speeches to larger groups, or at least pre-pandemic to the larger groups, maybe in assembly format, but you also work with students in smaller groups. So tell me a little bit about how your work with high schoolers and colleges has changed now in the past 6 months due to the pandemic, and what you're looking for to do in into 2021 as you most hopefully we'll be going back to the schools, and maybe how some of that work is going to shift into maybe a larger more socially distant group setting.
Yeah. So one of my, my sayings is that don't make life deep. I feel that sometimes we overcomplicate things.
Sure.
For me, it's basically doing the same thing that I did in person virtually. Yeah. That's whether it's 30 students, 20 students, I'm still going to give you the authentic me. I'm still going to share my story, but I'm going to also make sure that the educators, because my firm belief is that the principals are the head coach of the school.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my job as the quarterback coming in to make sure that mm-hmm. I run the right play and win the championship.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever the pain points is, that's what I'm going to attack. Yes, you know, I mainly focus on social emotional learning and helping them to be able to become effective students or mm-hmm. educators from the inside out. But as far as virtually, I mean, I'm just going to do the same thing that I did physically.
Mm-hmm.
There's no different for me. Of course, it's a little bit more harder because now it's not as everybody's like, ooh, 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 and I can't actually physically, you know, give you a handshake or give you a hug. But I'm still not going to allow that to stop me from impacting these students. So that's what I would say. And as far as just, you know, going into 21, I'm hoping that COVID leaves. Cause I just need to be in front of the students and the educators and just, I'm a people person. Like I love people. So to be able to be around them and hug them and look them in their face and just, you know, see the tears come out or the impact that I've made through the story that I've been through to inspire them and help them. It's different being live than it is virtual. So, yeah.
How have you seen yourself evolve as a public speaker? And you said for about the past 5 years you've been doing this.
Can you say that one more time?
How have you seen yourself evolve as a public speaker? Like, can you, if you watch videos of yourself, 5 years ago, what are some things that you maybe cringe at or, you know, think that you've improved upon since you started doing these?
When I first started, to be honest with you, I was more so focused on being perfect,
mm-hmm,
being
mm-hmm.
that perfect presenter, like, you know, not being, just don't mess up, Will, like be extremely perfect. And I realized that, you know, when it comes to public speaking, like, it's just you being yourself.
Yeah.
That's all it comes down to. Like at the end of the day, half the people who are listening to you wishing that they can do that mm-hmm. because it's like other besides death, that's like the second greatest fear is public mm-hmm. speaking.
Yeah.
So I realized that, Will, it's not about you. Like if you're nervous, it's because you're focusing on two things, being perfect and what the audience sees.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that. Take the energy of being nervous and channel it into a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the number one mistake that I made starting out was trying to be perfect. How I evolved was basically studying the greats, studying Tony Robbins, Les Brown, Dr. Eric Thomas, Inky Johnson, studying the greats and trying to see, you know, how they operate and how they flow. And always looking back at the game film of my speeches, like, okay, Will, you could have said something better. You couldn't mm-hmm. have not said that. Did you ask the actual person who brought you in? Can you talk about that? You know what I'm saying? Is it a touchy subject? Is it not a touchy subject? To be able to understand these things, because as speakers, it's not about us.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the audience that we're solving the problem for. And I always say the greatest curriculum is transparency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more transparent you can be, the more people you can free. So mm-hmm. that's what I would say as far as that evolving. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I really like that quote. The more transparent you can be, the more people you can set free. I mean, yeah. I think, you know, both as a speaker to education, you know, kids in schools and to educational leaders, I think, you know, people need to keep that in mind as I work with, children of all ages, right? Because, we're all humans. And sometimes, teachers might see people up on a pedestal. And, you know, I think, like you say, when you can get real with somebody, and, not overthink it, right? Don't overthink it when you're going into those places. Tell me a little bit about some of the different places geographically. In the intro, I talked about you spoken abroad, but also, different states and areas that you've worked with schools in the U.S.
Definitely. I love Florida. I love Florida. Florida is amazing. Love California. If you notice, I'm naming all the hot states. I just love that. I do not like cold weather, but wherever the mission is, that's where I'm going. Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
Or Seattle, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Connecticut. been all over, you know. And for me, to be honest with you, it still amazes me how people request me.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I still can't believe, like, it's like I got to pinch myself. I'm like, Will, like, are they really asking you to come out here and speak mm-hmm. and share your story to make an impact in their district and in their schools? So, you know, I've been around a lot of places, and I'm thankful for that because, you know, where I come from, most people don't even get an opportunity to be on a plane. You know, never mind just actually just living life or speaking. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would say as far as that, you know, colleges, corporate. I've done 2 corporate engagements. And to be honest with you, I don't really like corporate at all. Mm-hmm. I don't, but I do love the educational space. That's my heart. So, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about a success story from a building you've spoken at or a district you've worked with. And how maybe students and teachers have followed up with you after your speaking engagement, and maybe how you've heard from those students and how you've made an impact in their lives.
Yeah. So I want to say February of this year, mm-hmm. I did a presentation for Black History Month at Chinook Middle School mm-hmm. out here in Seattle, Washington. And man, I spoke for 45 minutes. I was there basically the whole day. But the thing that empowered me the most was after I did the whole school assembly, all the students was coming up to me, left and right, left and right, left and right. And at the end, there was one specific student who came up to me. And he said, literally, my dad does not want me in my life. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. And he started crying.
Yeah,
you know me. I'm a people person. I embraced him. You know, I embraced him, hugged him, let him know everything was gonna be okay. I let him know that, you know, this is a part of life. Like, these are painful moments, but they're gonna make you who you are. It's a part of your story. Yeah. As I'm embracing him, and then you got the educators in the back crying. You know what I'm saying? I'm crying, and it's just like, man. And then from there, literally, as I was there the whole day, you know, all the principals and all the teachers are just like, you know, you are making such an impact in the school. We've never had a speaker come here and these students will be like this. Mind you, Mr. Winfield, it's never even this quiet during a presentation. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow. And I get that a lot, you know, like, yeah. it's never like this. And so, you know, as I'm leaving the school, I'm looking at my phone, and, you know, because I'm big on, you know, being able to allow them to be connecting with me, mm-hmm. whether it's social media or email. And I'm getting all of these messages on Instagram, like, Mr. Winfield, thank you so much for coming here. They're sharing all their pains, their stories with me. I kid you not, I was about like at least 55 students that sent me messages, and I'm responding back to all of them while I'm driving. While my friend's driving, and just sending them voice messages and voice and videos, and just letting them know that everything's gonna be okay. Then when I get home, the principal hits me up and they said, Mr. Winfield, we have to get you back here. Mm-hmm. Students need you. And the district is hearing about it, and we wanna make some major moves because this school has never received that kind of impact before. So that is my biggest heartfelt moment when it came to my speaking career. I'm like, whoa, like, wow. Yeah.
I mean, the fact that you can make major changes in that culture, and just to hear, like, was that an elementary school or a middle school?
Middle school.
Okay. You know, just to hear, like, of groups of kids that you're speaking to that never are that quiet, right? And that, you know, they're so mesmerized by what you have to say. Right. But also the fact that you're making that personal connection with those kids, inviting them to reach out to you via Instagram. And, you know, I really hope, like you said, that all these speaking engagements will go back in the next few months in person, and that you're able to be in that assembly format and, you know, just hear back from those kids. Because I think that's what helps you grow as a speaker as well. And, you know, as you say, like, move on to other schools within that district and, you know, really get the word out, you know, in changing school culture and changing students' lives. I think this is such a great opportunity to, you know, share about your, you know, story, your services that you provide with the speaking engagements. I wanted to just ask if there were any quotes as we wrap things up. Are there any quotes that resonate with you in your work, you know, that for my question I usually ask out of everything we discussed today, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
So I love coming from Gino Auriemma, the head coach of the UConn Huskies. Mm-hmm. He says, and I love this quote, he says, without pressure, it's hard to do great things. Mm-hmm. And I always live by that. I always live by the mindset of the fourth quarter. Just every single day you wake up, it's the fourth quarter. Like, pressure is what makes you great. Mm-hmm. Pressure is what makes diamonds. So to be able to be in a mindset that says, you know what, every day I wake up, I have to give my full potential and maximize it. Because the truth is, we don't know if we have tomorrow. We have to live in the moment. We have to live in today. So give it your all every single day. So that's what I would say as far as that quote to leave the audience with. Yep.
Great. You mentioned a little bit about your Instagram account. So people can find you on Instagram. You know, I found you on LinkedIn, and you also have a Twitter account. So what is that handle? Where can people connect with you online?
Yep, got you. So Twitter is at willisblessed3&8. Okay, Twitter, willisblessed3&8. And then Instagram is willisblessed. Facebook, William Winfield. LinkedIn, William Winfield. And YouTube, William Winfield.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast. Have a great rest of your day.
You too.
Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.